Hello, I'm Terrence McNally, and welcome to Free Forum, A World That Just Might Work. I'll be speaking today with Eunice Lynn Nichols, co-CEO of CoGenerate, the recently chosen new name for what had been called Encore.org. As the organization evolved from a focus on seniors to one on co-generation, bringing older and younger people together to solve problems. And you can learn more at cogenerate.org. That's C-O-G-E-N-E-R-A-T-E, cogenerate.org. On Freeform, we explore the lives, the work, the ideas of individuals that I suspect have pieces of the puzzle of a world that just might work. We look at politics, economics, environment, science, health, culture, all based on the fact that I believe we can do better, and I want to find out how. The show streams weekly on the Progressive Voices Network on TuneIn.com, and podcasts are available anytime, anywhere on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, most major podcast sites, and at my site, TerrenceMcNally.net, TerrenceMcNally.net. As anyone who listens to this show already knows, I've been talking for a few years about something I call 60s 2.0, a short and simple way to signal what I was noticing about young people and boomers. I see in millennials and younger questions, values, visions that echo the best of the 60s, but I believe they have a chance to build something deeper and more sustainable this time with the help of technology, demographics, and some cultural and social evolution, which opens up a much deeper talent pool. When I organized an intergenerational dialogue for a symposium at my Harvard 50th reunion in 2019 between members of our class and current undergraduate activists and some millennials involved in social impact, both sides seemed receptive to the shared values, the threads of continuity, the potential for partnership. And at one point, when I told one young activist that I felt we in the 60s had failed, he corrected me. He said, "You were just 50 years ahead of your time. You didn't have the technology." A lot has gone well, and a lot has gone terribly wrong in those 50 years. Here's my vision. Boomers and older, aligned with millennials and younger, in an energized, engaged, and effective, intentionally multi-generational alliance to take on the biggest challenges confronting us, and together able to tip things in the right direction in time. According to a report from the Stanford Center on Longevity, we are living in the most age-diverse society in human history, with almost equal numbers of people of every age from birth to 74 and beyond. At the same time, we've become a deeply age-segregated nation, one that provides few opportunities for the generations to connect in daily life, much less combine their talents. Traditionally, young people are in school, middle people at work, and older ones are often isolated at home or in retirement communities or nursing homes. To anyone who dismisses the possibility of union and collaboration with a nod to OK Boomer, I say, if the challenges we confront are big enough to divide us, then they must be big enough to bring us together. While I was writing and talking about this, others were intent on making it a reality, which brings me to today's conversation with Eunice Lynn Nichols, as I said, co-CEO of CoGenerate. On October 12th, 2022, Encore.org changed its name to CoGenerate. In the words of Encore founder and Eunice's co-CEO, Mark Friedman, "For much of Encore's history, we have focused on encouraging and enabling older people to find purpose and connection through helping solve societal problems, especially ones linked to improving the lives and prospects of young people. Now, in our new chapter as an organization, in Encore's Encore, we're taking the next step." And I love this sentence. "We are not just asking what older people can do for the next generation, but what older people can do with the next generation. We are focusing on how the generations can come together to forge bonds, solve problems, and bridge divides. And we're asking how they can co-create a better future for all ages." And in the words of today's guest, We're changing our name from Encore.org to CodeGenerate because we believe there's never been a more critical or more promising time to reach across the generational divide and work together for change. As CodeGenerate, we're focusing on what the vast and growing older population can do in collaboration with younger generations to solve society's most pressing problems. We call that intergenerational collaboration co-generation, and we believe it's an essential and effective strategy to create connection across differences, combat polarization and ageism, and build an equitable, healthy, inclusive, productive, safe, and joyful world together. The challenges and opportunities are clear, she writes, and we will talk about those today. Eunice Lynn Nichols is co-CEO of CodeGenerate. Her more than two decades of bringing older and younger generations together to bridge divides and solve problems includes leading CodeGenerate's innovations portfolio, serving as national campaign director for the Generation to Generation initiative within Encore, running the Purpose Prize. She has been recognized as a Next Avenue influencer in aging and a recipient of the James Irvine Foundation Leadership Award for advancing innovative and effective solutions to California's most significant issues. Welcome, Eunice Lynn Nichols, to Free Forum, A World That Just Might Work.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be with you today.
And let me tell listeners, we're recording this conversation Friday, February 24th. I like listeners to get a feel for the people behind the work and the ideas that we talk about. So, in your own words, tell us a bit about yourself. I hit some highlights, but briefly, perhaps, how do you see your path to the work you're doing today? You can go way back, mentors, turning points, moments of decision, that sort of thing, inspirations.
I love that you start here because I don't think you can talk about co-generational work or values without actually bringing in a whole lot of people that are more than me. So let me start in a values-aligned way. my journey here really actually began in my childhood. I'm the daughter of immigrants from Taiwan who came here for grad school, pretty isolated, disconnected from community. My parents didn't know anybody. They met in grad school. And then started a life here. And what they did because of the Chinese culture that they came from is they reflexively pulled together versions of extended family. And so when I was born in the Midwest in St. Louis, Missouri, even though there weren't a lot of people who looked like me around, my parents had pulled together a lot of people who were like aunts and uncles and grandmas and grandpas to me, even though they weren't related. Mm-hmm. And of course, eventually when they could, they brought my actual grandparents over too. So in my early years, I grew up with them in the home. So in some ways, multi-generational living and intergenerational connection was just native to me. And it wasn't really until I left home and flew the coop, went to college out east, that I got funneled into a world that was filled with one life stage, kind of young people just like me. And I loved it. It was thrilling. And of course, when I graduated from college and launched out on my own and had an apartment with some friends that were also recent graduates, really felt like I had arrived. But it didn't take long for me to start to feel a little disconnected from something. And I didn't know what it was until I did a job search. And I was switching from management consulting, which had been exciting. I got to travel. But I there was this job that really attracted me. And it was in San Francisco, and it was to help launch an intergenerational program that would bring teams of older adults who are 50 and older into public schools to help kids read by third grade. And it harkened back to the fact that I loved reading, I loved books, I was an English major, supportive of education. And then, of course, there was just like this fact that I'd grown up with my grandparents. I was like, I know old people. I love old people. I could bring a bunch of older people into schools to be with kids. But that was about the extent of my thinking. One of my mentors, the person who hired me for that job, gave me a chance. I was young. I was, it was like the blind leading the blind. I was in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. And I grew this program from a tiny, scrappy neighborhood organization into a multi-city, multi-school program that was bringing hundreds of adults 50 and older into school, serving thousands of kids. We did a lot of great work in the decade that I did that. But when I look back, what I was really doing was getting this amazing entree into working on a multi-generational team. My volunteers were not, because they were 50 and older, they were not normal volunteers. They were from the neighborhood. They were dedicated to the neighborhood. Some of them went to the elementary schools that we were serving.
I love that. Yeah.
Not transitional. And for public schools, especially in a lot of inner cities or low-income neighborhoods, there's a lot of turnover in teaching staff, in the support systems for kids. So imagine taking an institutional setting like a school and infusing into it, not one, not two, but teams of older adults. I had 10, 15 volunteers in each of these schools, and they weren't going anywhere. And they were serving because they had time during the day. Half of them were serving 15 to 20 hours a week. So they were like part-time resources. And meanwhile, my scrappy nonprofit, as so many are, was staffed by a lot of young people. We were powered by AmeriCorps Vista as sort of a, like a domestic Peace Corps. Young people who were there for 1 year to kickstart their future, to do it in a way that was embedded in service and community, but often parachuting in from other parts of the country for this 1 year experience. And so that magical combination of young people who were in aggressive learning mode, willing to do anything, you know, they would go staff a booth at a community festival, they would print flyers, they would canvas the street, they would train volunteers, they would do whatever the schools needed. But that combined with this steadfast team of older adults who knew the neighborhood, knew the context, knew the kids, knew the parents of the kids, was really magical. And so while we did a lot of great things on the educational academic side, I think some of the big influences that we frankly didn't track at the time were the ways that early experience impacted me and these young AmeriCorps members changed the trajectory of our lives. One, to see the beauty and benefit of a diverse multi-generational team, to know that we didn't want to work any other way in the future, and to know that that kind of each generation bringing their different strengths and skills could be a part of solving really seemingly intractable problems in the community. So that was in many ways my start, connected to my immigrant background and my grandparents. And I feel I've been so lucky over the last 20 or so years to have at every step worked in a place that valued deeply multi-generational teams. Stepping into, you mentioned my co-leadership with Mark, the founder of then Encore, now CoGenerate, has been part of that journey to not just do work in a multi-generational way, but to actually co-lead in a way that honors that diversity.
One question which I couldn't quite see the answer to was Experience Core, though it sounds like an Encore.org project, and is in the same city, was not?
Oh, yeah. So this is an important part of the story. So it was. That was a program that was designed by Mark and actually co-generationally designed by Mark and John Gardner, who was Mark's mentor. They were, I think, 40 years apart in age. And John Gardner was one of Encore's first board members, gave Experience Core its name. And that's kind of a funny story, too, because it was really clear to us that Experience Core was a place for experienced people, a core of experienced people. But when we tested it with the volunteers, they all thought it was a place to come and get experiences.
Sure.
Because they weren't done yet. So
it works both ways.
Works both ways. But Experience Core was a program designed by and run by Encore for many years. And at some point we knew, you know, we're really a small, scrappy organization. We like to catalyze innovation. We like to support leaders who are doing incredible work to extend purpose and passion and impact of older adults and increasingly older adults with young people. We're not really an organization that should be running boots on the ground programs in perpetuity. Mm. And Experience Core was successful. It ended up in more than 20 cities. You know, I was running the Bay Area program and we were in three cities with 24 schools. And so we ended up partnering with AARP and they took over the program. They were looking for a signature program that would showcase the amazing potential of older adults to give back in significant ways. And they were looking for something that would really help younger generations. And so it was a sort of a match made in heaven.
Mm-hmm. So and once you built it, and had it thriving, you were able to turn it over to them and say, keep it alive.
Exactly, exactly. And we followed that playbook with another signature program of ours that was another kind of milestone learning experience for me, which is we launched a program called the Purpose Prize. And that was a program that honored social entrepreneurs over the age of 50 who were, and we weren't awarding them, it was not a lifetime achievement award. It was for the work that they had yet to do. And so, you know, we would have these people on the stage who we were honoring, they'd be like 60, 70, 80, and be there talking about the next big chapter of their life.
Yeah.
And about half of them were doing work that deeply connected for and with young people. So even that had the early stages of where our organization has headed today. That program, we would give away anywhere from $25,000 to $100,000 to the Purpose Prize awardees each year. And that got to a point where it was successful, but we knew we needed to find a home for the program as well. And Purpose Prize is now AARP Purpose Prize, and they've taken it to a whole new level.
Right. Well, I mean, it sounds like they were smart to use you as their sort of pilot.
Good relationship. We each get to stay in our, you know, we are scrappy. We are good
right.
at innovation. We like to launch things where you have capacity to launch things that might not go as well. And we learn from that and we pivot. It's a good place to be. And then it's great to have an organization like AARP that can actually see the potential for something to have a much bigger national impact, take it over and then run it.
Yeah. And they're, you know, you're small and scrappy. They're huge.
Yes, that's an understatement. They are huge.
Huge and wealthy. Very, very good. By the way, I don't know if you probably do know this, but John Gardner was also the inspiration for Common Cause.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, he has people who don't know him, is he a psychologist? I know his one of his big contributions was different kinds of intelligence.
Yeah.
Which has its own whole, you know, that whole thing of social intelligence, social emotional intelligence, all of that comes from John Gardner. Common Cause, which is a major pro-democracy movement in America, comes from John Gardner. And I didn't realize that Cogenerate also comes from, I mean, what a legacy that man has.
It's a huge legacy. I think he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is, I think, the highest, one of the highest accolades you can get in America before he did any of those things that you just named.
Oh, my
cause,
God.
You know, Social Security, like all these things he did after he had already been awarded as being the most amazing person.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I was going to ask you how you pursued your feeling, your urge to work in cogenerational spaces and to create cogenerational communities prior to joining the Encore. But I now realize that basically you joined Encore as a young person, 26. Is that what you were?
That's right. Yeah, I was 26, 27. And very formative time in my career. And I often will say that I grew up in the Encore movement.
That's right.
I almost don't know work life without that. And just kind of a funny aside, I remember when I turned 40, which for many of my generation, like 40 feels like a big deal. And my friends would turn 40 and there'd be this like lamenting of like, oh, I'm getting old. I turned 40 and I wrote a blog post on why I'm actually looking forward to 50. I'm like, I'm only at 40. I've spent my entire life surrounded by people who were 50 and older, doing the best work of their lives. And it didn't matter what background they came from. You know, they could have, you know, primarily raised their kids and grandkids not had a career. They could have been a social entrepreneur, been the head of a C-suite person. Didn't matter. I just was surrounded by all kinds of people who were making their greatest contributions. And there's something about that narrative and reality that I was experiencing every day that's quite different than my peers. That has given me a different view of aging.
Sure.
I don't think it's Pollyanna, because I also get the reality of the challenges of aging. But mm-hmm. It is not disconnected from purpose. It's not disconnected from contribution and connection. I've always been like, oh, I can't wait to get to 50, assuming there'd be this magical thing that would happen to me that I see in a lot of the folks that I've been working with for 20 years now. And as I get closer to 50 myself, I realize, you know what? It's you take a step every day towards that. Make sure you stay connected to people and to purpose. And I'm really proud to be part of a body of work that's trying to make that more accessible for everyone.
Oh, excellent. And another question I was thinking about, and I now see that if Experience Corps was your first Experience Corps was your first experience within Encore, that maybe the answer is obvious. But when you entered Encore, did you see it as a an organization that was intentionally moving towards cogeneration, or did that really evolve more once you were there?
No, I came in to orchestrate a program, a wonderful program that would mobilize the assets, the wonderful creative and life experience assets of older adults to help kids read by third grade. In my mind, it was very clear it was a mentoring program, and I was going to help these kids. The reality is, over 10 years, my team of older adults just had a way of captivating me and my staff, and it became really clear that my biggest role was to be an advocate and champion for them to unleash those talents and skills on behalf of kids, but they could do so much more. It wasn't just one-on-one tutoring with a kid. I had volunteers who wanted to launch an environmental awareness day for the school and had resources and could mobilize people and money to make that happen. Or they wanted to go picket in front of City Hall to make sure the elementary school didn't get shut down with these signs that said "Elders and Youth Better Together." There was so much more they could do to support the bigger system. And I started to see what they were doing as more than kind of like service delivery. They were actually turning these schools into places that felt like extended family. So it's really a journey over time. I think in retrospect, Mark and I can look back at what we had done, and we see cogeneration everywhere. Those older adults weren't just serving. They were doing with parents, with young people, with young staff, even launching service projects with kids. I don't think it was clear to us at the time. That's been a journey for us for sure.
That's interesting. Yes, even though it was with, you saw it as four.
Yes, I saw it as four. And the other part that's interesting, that's just a little bit of my journey, is I think I always felt like I was a young person doing work on behalf of older generations, which was really important work, but I think I felt outside of it, the way sometimes you can volunteer and do something, but it's for a community that is other than yours. And there's something about in the last, and I've done this work for a long time now, but our shift to cogenerate, which was itself a multi-year journey before we literally changed the name, was the first time as we started to publicly embrace the language, the mode, to innovate and create programs that were really about the with, that I myself started to feel not like I was doing work on behalf of others, but I was doing work that actually involved and included me.
I want to ask the question of that evolution of how, how cogenerate became cogenerate first in its work, in its vision, and so on, and then in its name. But I also wanted to talk so about one piece of your work there that we haven't touched on. We've touched on the Purpose Prize, which you ran within Encore. We've touched Experience Corps, but you also, I guess, what was kind of a transition program, the Generation to Generation Initiative. Tell us what that was.
That was actually an important precursor to becoming Cogenerate. So the Gen to Gen campaign was a campaign to mobilize large numbers of older adults on behalf of kids. But it was initially conceived to be one directional. Older people have talents and skills and assets, and let's, agnostically, we know it doesn't matter what they do, but let's just stir the pot on getting Americans across the country who are 50 and older to step up and do things for kids. And we went into several years this mode of mobilization. We put out a bunch of campaigns, support education, help kids, make it through the summer gap when they lose a lot of access to resources because they aren't at school. And we pointed our mobilization efforts in many directions. And as we did that, it started to become clear that while older adults had a lot to give, there was some additional power added to the equation when they were doing it with younger people. And some people were mobilizing in ways that were in an intergenerational way. And we just hadn't really intentionally paid that much attention to it. It wasn't part of the narrative that we were proactively pushing. But because we were doing this on such a wide scale national level, we started to just see, but it became clear to us because the stories were so prominent. And it was in that time that about halfway through this campaign that had been designed for young people, that I started to feel, you know, and I was leading the campaign. I was like, I don't know if that's the right main message, which is really kind of an uncomfortable place to be when you're running something. You come up with your slogan.
That's right.
And you're like, I just don't know if the tent is big enough.
Right.
And it kind, you know, and then it coincided with a lot of other things. The rise in really inspiring activism from young people, a narrative which you've spoken so eloquently about, that this question, can older and younger people work together, in a sense, in an intuition that a lot more could be done if we stopped fighting and started working together. Then the pandemic happened. And I think that was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back. Well, there must be an analogy that's positive rather than negative, right? Help me with that one. But this I think the pandemic was the thing that broke it open for us, because a lot of research prior to the pandemic had been showing that around the issues of social isolation and loneliness, we often assume older people are the most isolated and alone, but young people were starting to report higher rates of feeling isolated and alone. And then the pandemic struck in and was like all hell broke loose, but with this centerpiece around isolation of elders and a very different kind of isolation around young people.
Yes.
And it started to become clear that these two bookends really could be each other's solutions if we had systems, technology, the will to actually bring them together. And there's something about isolated people where it seems obvious that the solution is you bring them together, right? There isn't anything complicated about that. So that brought a lot of clarity to the fact that it wasn't a one helping the other, it was the two helping each other. And that as they did that reflexively, when people connect and they've got different assets and creative energies and interests, it just so often naturally channels into doing good for those around them. It just spills over. Mm-hmm. And so we started to track that and ended up feeling, I think Mark also, I'll say this is another piece of it. I did start in Encore as a young person. Mark launched, he created Encore as a young person, but John Gardner was the older person in
right,
the mix,
right?
Right. And so, but he started as a young person. We both in that sense have the same narrative of came into the work because we were young people that love being with older people. But Mark is now in his 60s and he, at some point, without even noticing, kind of transitioned into realizing he was an older person
who now really longed to be with young people.
To
think about is that you're, and it's funny there, I think, I saw The Atlantic had an article, I think it was The Atlantic, a couple of days ago, how old are you and how old do you feel? And I can see that Mark goes in as a young person. He's doing all this. Meanwhile, the calendar's doing one thing, but he's still inside. He's the young person. It must
yes,
be so, and
that's right.
It must be so interesting when he, I mean, and what I like in your story so far, Eunice, is it's you're doing good, certainly from my perspective, all along this path.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
there's moments where you kind of realize you're doing it in a way you didn't quite know you were doing it, or you're doing it, you know, on a path you didn't quite know you were doing it, which I think is fascinating. These realizations that dawn on you sort of with a time lag.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, we work in the, we're kind of all swimming in the waters that
exactly,
we created.
Exactly.
And it's hard to see if you don't get outside of it a little. Mm-hmm. And I do think it was, we were at the moment, we had been running the Purpose Prize where the people we were targeting were all over 50. That's kind of what we did. All our volunteers and Experience Corps were over 50. And then we launched this new fellowship and our instinct was like, maybe, because we were getting excited by the width, like let's Let's actually have our first ever fellowship that is itself multi-generational. Let's look for proactively an age-diverse group. And it was this innovation fellowship that we launched. And there was a moment where I think we were looking at applicants and Mark was feeling really compelled by some young go-getter entrepreneurs. And then he had a moment of guilt because we had spent 20 years really trying to right the imbalance of older people being discarded in this area. And that's like the way we're wired. And so he was feeling guilty about even being drawn to these much younger applicants. And I think that was the moment we had the revelation. I was like, you know what, Mark? I think we need to free you up to be the person that our field has created you in a beautiful way to be, which is an older person who now cares deeply about young people. You shouldn't feel guilty. This is the proof that we've done a good job.
Exactly. You are the product of your own creation.
Exactly. And so I think for us, that's the shift. You'll see actually from that moment, a dramatic shift from the program when we did to start to focus on not just leadership communities of older people, but to say as a gift to the older people, having young people in there will actually make it a more engaging, more exciting space. We started to do multi-generational fellowships. The first one we launched, the youngest fellow was in college, a student at UT Austin who'd launched a really cool tech platform during the pandemic to connect older, isolated people with young people, mostly college students who are all of a sudden alone and at loose ends. And our oldest person was in her 80s, a former provost who has just, brought amazing experience, completely different wiring. And this fellowship, when we brought the generations together, the amount of cross-learning, aha moments, and joy just went off the charts. It was really spectacular.
And this is a program, specifically is a niche within kind of generation to generation, which was the fellows, about, what is it, 15 a year or something like that?
Yes, that's right. And so now it's our Co-Generate Innovation Fellows. It was kind of a pilot. We've run a couple other fellowship programs also that are now intergenerational. And all of them, it really helps the teams when they can pull from these different perspectives.
Sure.
So it's been, the proof is in the pudding.
Yep. Okay, so let me tell people, this is Free Forum, a world that just might work. I'm Terrence McNally. I'm speaking with Eunice Lynn Nichols. She's co-CEO of Co-Generate, the recently chosen new name for what had been called Encore.org. And the name was changed as the organization's focus evolved, really, from seniors' purposeful second and third acts to co-generation, bringing older and younger people together to solve problems and bridge divides. And you can learn more at cogenerate.org. C-O-G-E-N-E-R-A-T-E, cogenerate, all one word, .org. I wanted to ask you about the study, the research study that the University of Chicago did. Mm. At what point did you do that study? And did it just confirm what you already knew, or did it tell you something new?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've had so many stories and programmatic input and intuition that older and younger people want to be together and that they do better work when they're together. But every now and then we come across people that are advisors to us who are like, yeah, that all sounds great, but do older people really want to be with young people? And there was just a little like question in their mind. And then we'd come across young people who would ask the same thing. Like, you know what, we just need to go out there and do the research and get the data. So we commissioned a research study with the National Opinion Research Center out of University of Chicago last summer, so relatively recently. And we weren't sure. We had a conversation about what we do.
Is it all just anecdotal?
Right. What do we do if it turns out people don't actually want to co-generate? And our questions were, they span the gamut. Are you interested in co-generation, kind of older and younger coming together to connect and collaborate? Do you think it's important? Do you think it can actually solve some important problems? That kind of thing. So it's really an attitude and appetite survey.
Mm-hmm.
So when we got the report, there were some things that were a great relief, not surprising, but were a relief. And that was that everybody wants to and thinks it's a good thing to co-generate. Like 90% said, this is a good idea and we think it can make a difference. The thing that shocked us is we did break out responses by generation. And I think based on my experience, I would have assumed that older adults would say that they were more interested in working with young people than young people are with older people. That young people just want to be with young
I
people.
would have guessed the same thing.
Yeah, shocking. Young people wanted to, were more likely to join an activity or go do something if they knew it would be co-generational than older people. They both wanted it, but young people even more so.
Wow.
And we've thought a little bit about why that might be, and we haven't done more research to actually be able to back that up. But I have some speculation. I'm curious if you have speculations on why that might be.
Well,
But
one thing
yeah.
I would say, and this was the first thing that popped in my head, is that young people are more likely to say they want to get involved in anything than older people. So whatever is that 10% right there? You know, just that I'm more apt to say, because as a young person, it's like the world is full of possibilities. As an older person, it may not seem that way. And so, you know, that might account for a certain percentage.
Yeah, that's interesting. Young people as joiners and
Yeah.
kind of born to be to join things. I think that could be it, but I also wonder if young people as they in particular I'm not talking about like a, you know, would they be more likely to go to a social party if it were multi-generational. The framing was really like would you want to go do something, solve a problem or join an activity in that way if it were multi-generational. I wonder if young people have a better sense of the importance of diversity of experience and perspective, resource and assets. I'm not sure, but I'm
Oh,
curious if that's
and I
part of
hear
it,
what you're
right?
saying, what I just heard in what you say, and see if that is what you were saying, was I'd already said I think they're more apt to join. I think you're saying they're more apt to favor diversity, because
Yeah.
the old people have lived in a society where diversity may not have been happening as much, and we know the younger generations are diverse in terms of race and gender and all of those sorts of things.
That's right. Yeah, and I think maybe aware as they're trying to change the world that they don't yet have everything they need because they might not have the financial backing, they
That's
might not
right.
have the connections that older people represent an important resource, but young people aren't always connected and don't have the pathway in. And that's the other part that the research showed that I won't say is surprising, but it was if young people really want this, the other piece was that people of color of all ages wanted this more than non-people than basically white people and Asians. And so Blacks and Hispanics by far 2 times more had
And
a wiring towards
what's your
cogeneration.
intuition on that one?
That one's interesting to me, and I would love to dig more into why the Asian percentage is lower, because I would have
Yes,
expected that to be higher
that's
because
right.
of
I would have thought, and when you were
yes.
talking about your Asian heritage, I was thinking about that I have my closest friend from high school moved to Maui right after college, and I have visited many times and watched his family grow up and so on. And I see that same thing there of uncles and aunties,
Yeah.
right?
Yep,
Same,
that's right.
it's that same culture.
So I have a speculation on that. Once again, it's not grounded in research, but if anybody listening to this has some dollars to put behind research, this would be a good thing to look into. I think that Hispanic culture and African American communities still have a lot of embedded, naturally occurring multi-generational families. So much like the culture I grew up in. And I also think that there are still a lot of like the importance of shared resource, kind of coming together to get something done is embedded. And I think young people, and I speak to a lot of increasingly speak to more and more young people today, actually feel more grounded and enjoy being in that environment. They're not anti being with older people. They don't want older people to just tell them what to do, though. But I think when they feel respected and they're part of a team, that actually feels really natural. On the Asian side, this is pure speculation. I wonder if there are some specific dynamics to the Asian immigrant experience, based on my own upbringing. There is a really strong, there's a strong appetite towards assimilation, to fitting in.
Oh, interesting.
And I don't know. I can't say. I would not want to say whether or not all their immigrant cultures have the same level of assimilate, but I know that was a message I got a lot from my parents. You know, speak English before you speak Chinese. Make sure that you fit into this setting. There's a real priority on that. And it was part of, I think, them trying to, in their way, set me up for success. And a lot of that got embedded in me and others of my generation. And so I wonder if that spills over into us having sometimes more similar modes of being as the white culture. I think the other possible
Well,
piece...
even if I can jump from what you're saying, even whether conscious or not, doing what we're proposing here, which is do things with older folks, oh, that's just like the family I'm trying to assimilate away from.
Yes, yeah. Well, and I think that was always interesting is when I was recruiting volunteers for Experience Corps, I was doing it in San Francisco. There are a lot of older Asians in the community. Many of them were focused very much on supporting the extended their actual extended family.
Sure.
And would actually drop off kids at the after-school program and wait there for their grandchild to finish the program. But didn't necessarily, I don't think they knew that they had a spot if they wanted to actually contribute and volunteer, because kind of public volunteerism is not as embedded in the Asian culture. Like going to all extents of service for your extended family or your
yeah.
immediate community is. We started to launch an initiative to actually just go and talk to the older Chinese grandparents and say, hey, we have a role for you. We'd like to invite you in. And we had some amazing volunteers, but without the specific invite, I don't know that that was actually as mm-hmm. as natural for them to know that that was a path that mm-hmm. they could take. So, you know, I'll say this is all speculation. I'll say the other side is that I think that what you said earlier about this, the desire for diversity, I do think is true for younger generations. And stepping into a space where all views are honored and accepted and not having blind spots is an exciting space to be in. And I think we can do more to make that possible.
I so agree. I mean, it's one of those things which I think I'll tell you, I'll be 75 this spring, this May. So I was a young person and a young activist and a young teacher and all of those things at a time when the generation gap was, you know, was like a big deal in culture. And to watch young people, and of course, I also, not of course, but I also grew up in the South, and it was during my time in high school that integration happened. I started in an all-white high school. And so, you know, to watch the embrace of diversity and the curiosity and the engagement and everything of younger generations is so exciting to me. And you know, and of course, we know if we're looking at the American scene today, it seems to be, you know, somewhat older. There's a certain segment of the somewhat older white population of which finds this, you know, nervous, upsetting, frightening, all of those sorts of things. But from my perspective, that embrace of what everyone has to offer and we're all in this together is so exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, I think one of the most exciting places where co-generational innovation is happening, and we'd love to see more of it, is on college campuses, which are often located in communities surrounded by older adults who live nearby. And whether that, and so there are all kinds of opportunities for that proximity to actually turn into intentional interaction.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It does require some shifts in behavior and structures. And that could look like anything from, we've been tracking a number of growing organizations that are looking at the double problem of older adults struggling to stay in their homes and maintain their homes and afford to live there, and young people in colleges in particular in more urban settings where they can't afford to actually even rent an apartment and are borderline homeless or living literally homeless, living out of their cars. And in the pandemic, we work with a partner who is in Orange County, where the local state college opened up a parking lot for students to safely sleep in their cars at night. Mm. It was almost an admittance that this is the best we can do. And this organization ended up launching, it was based on the Homelessness Intervention Services of Orange County, a co-housing innovation where older adults who had a spare bedroom in the community could provide at reduced cost a room for a student that was struggling to make ends meet. And the student in return provides some light help around the house. And then there's a companionship piece that has been interesting for both, not just the older person. You'd think it was about the older person, but these young people were dealing with pandemic, post-pandemic anxiety, trying to figure out their career path in life, and having the elder be there for them in their living environment was just a breath of fresh air. And so that's a good example of a single, you know, a shared problem between the different generations that has a mutual solution.
Yeah. No, I had a set of questions here, which we've already dealt with somewhat, but it was, how does CoGenerate, its vision, its goals, its activities, all of that, relate to, and I'll just throw them all out, an epidemic of loneliness? Well, we've just been talking mm-hmm. about that. Cultural and political tribalism, and a craving for purpose and meaning. It seems to me those are all, those three are all thrusts in our culture today that it seems to me this speaks to.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'll give you another example. It's just fresh on my mind because I just came back from a site visit in Phoenix to the campus of Arizona State University. And they're a super innovative university.
They are known as the most innovative university, I think, or if there's somehow I know that's the tag I apply to them. They
exactly.
have a sustainability institute. Michael Crow, the president,
yes.
He's put Arizona State on the map.
Yeah, exactly. So once again, not a surprise, an innovative university would have some really innovative co-generational programming. One thing that I had a chance to visit was they built it's called a university-based retirement community. So it's a retirement community that isn't near the university, it's on the campus,
wow.
literally on the campus. And so went and got a chance to have dinner with some of the residents. All of them get basically a student pass. They can attend any class. They can take it pass fail. They could take it for a grade. They can use the gym facilities. They can eat in the cafeteria. They're like students, they're just all over 50. And part of the cool piece of what they've done is they opened up 5 rooms in the retirement community for music grad students. And it's very competitive to get one of these 5 slots. So one, you get, you know, a room that's nicer than a dorm room. You get a chance to professionally prepare some musical programming for the residents, which is, so it's almost like a work internship program embedded in the mm-hmm, music program. Mm-hmm. But there are all kinds of interesting things that have come out of that, including one, I think at first that the low vision was like, oh, these music students will perform during a meal while the older adults eat. That's kind of, you know, low bar retirement community programming.
Yeah.
Turns out because these students were living there, were known by the residents, it was super awkward for the residents. They didn't want to be eating and talking while
right.
their friends, their young friends were performing. And so they shifted away from a more structured programming and included more flexible programming that was determined after the students got to know the residents and vice versa. And it looks like things like the residents where we actually just want to understand how you learn. So if you have to do a master class where you're critiquing each other, could you just do that in our space? And we'd love to watch and see how you learn. And that was a thread that was continued by a lot of the Mirabella residents who do take classes. When we asked, why are you taking the classes, or what determines if you take this class versus that? They were like, we just want to understand how young people think today, what they're learning, how they're processing it. It was really a focus on understanding a generation that felt distant to them. And I'll say, tie this to kind of your tribalism pieces. I think we have to take advantage of proximity and actually give older and younger people a chance to connect and see each other. But the older adults were also really clear, because I was like, okay, you have these 5 wonderful grad students here. Would it be better if your retirement community were 50-50? If it was really a truly integrated dorm
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and
so
retirement
there were,
community?
There were no tokens.
Correct. And they were all really clear that that would not be preferable.
Oh.
That for them, it was like they still valued having spaces for themselves. And this is, I think, the part that's probably you'll hear threads of it in other kinds of diversity initiatives, is that the goal isn't to fully integrate and say there's no difference. We still need some affinity spaces for people who are young. We have programs for young people for a reason, and sometimes they need to be in spaces where they are with each other. We need spaces for older adults where they are just with each other. How do we create more intentional, well-designed coming together? And I think this is an interesting model where we're learning from it, but the reflexive, let's just make it 50-50 or invite older adults into the student dorms was not the desired end goal. And so it was really a call for more intentionality around the engagement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one
thing I thought about as you were saying this is about Ali,
mm-hmm.
Which I've had some connection with. Ali is, there's a foundation in Maine that created this program that's now in hundreds of colleges where folks, is the 55 their break point, sort of, that they can take classes, and many times they're free or they're very reduced, and it just seems like a wonderful program to me. But it seems like what Arizona State has intuited is that Ollie are the 55-year-olds with each other, or are they integrated into the regular class? Where,
yeah, traditionally they are on their own with each other.
That's what I thought.
Taught by professors at the university.
That's what I thought. That an Ollie course is, you're gonna look around, you're gonna see people that look like you. But it seems to me this notion of mixing it up a little more would be an interesting direction for them.
Yeah. Well, and so while I was at ASU, I also had a chance to visit their Ollie program.
Uh-huh.
And so they have so many places to experiment. And that was another place where it was interesting to hear a perspective that it was nice to have options where older adults can be learning with each other.
Uh-huh.
And there are some Ollie classes that are located on the college campus and can think intentionally about how the content of the coursework actually might benefit from a concerted collaboration with students. And they're also sometimes an entry point of, you take the Ollie class and then are like, oh, you know what? That was a great experience. I think I can dip a toe into the water and actually take a student class where I might be in the minority. So having different options, I think it feels lesser than if Ollie is the only option. And frankly, it might feel lesser than if being integrated into an undergrad or graduate class was also the only option. So having the variety to pick and choose, I think is actually really nice.
Right. And just for listeners, that's Olli. If you want to look it up, if you're going, this is around. I didn't know this was possible. They're in all over the country. We've got 5 minutes. I want a quick answer to one thing, and I'm going to give you both questions right now. One is just, how does co-CEO work? that's the one I want sort of a short answer to. And then, where can people learn more? How can people get involved? That basic, let's end the hour with an invitation.
Yeah. All right. How does co-CEO work? So this is, I think we have a unique model in that there are some shared leadership models out there, far fewer that are co-generational, where mm-hmm. there is a multi-year generational gap. I think, this really resulted in a many years of partnership with Mark. And there are all kinds of reasons to consider the co-CEO or co-generational model, including sustainability and stability for the organization.
Sure.
From a leadership
perspective. In other words, instead of succession being a big problem, it is in so many organizations, you've sort of got that embedded in the way you operate.
Right. Yeah. There isn't this possible interim gap or this question of what's going to happen. But I'll be honest, the draw for me and for Mark wasn't actually primarily about succession. We've been partnering for a long time. And I think this is part of being from a different generation from Mark. I, as a younger person, and from my Asian background and culture and upbringing that we talked about earlier, I don't think I've ever had a desire. I don't long to lead in the way that I've seen Mark lead, or my mentors. All my mentors have led in the way that we traditionally see.
Interesting.
And this is another, we swim in the waters that we are in, despite all the co-generational work we've been doing, all the intergenerational experiences I've had, not once did I think about the possibility that I could lead in community. I could lead on a team. It's just not what's been put in front of me.
That's right.
And so when Mark and I started talking about this, I kind of had in my heart a no to a succession type of conversation, because I didn't want that. I didn't see myself in that. And it was in a series of kind of roundabout conversations where I was like, huh, but what if we did it together? And it kind of landed for both of us. It just like fell into place in a way that afterwards, like, why didn't we think of that earlier?
Well, because
Right?
you're fishing water and that is not the water.
It's not the water. We're even supporting programs. A board member of ours and a member of our innovation fellowship literally are in a co-generational leadership model doing work to make that more possible. Even supporting that did not make us think about it as an option for us. And so that's just like, that's, but I'll say to circle back, it's wonderful because it allows us to, we do really bring very different perspectives. Some of it's just person, you know, who we are. I'm a Chinese child of immigrants. Mark is like 20 years older than me. He's a man, I'm a woman, all these things. But the generational difference and even my desire for more distributed leadership, for more diversity at the leadership level in that way is part of what I'm bringing. And I'm being shaped not just by my generation, I'm being shaped by the ones even younger than me that I'm so inspired by. Mark is bringing his brand of leadership, thought leadership, the way he has built partnerships over time. We're both learning a ton. Being in meetings, we joke, we take away completely different things. You would think we were in different
Oh,
meetings.
interesting.
And so together, it's very clear when we come out and we debrief that we are two halves of a bigger whole. And I think about what it's been like for Mark to have to hold all of that for 20 some years on his own. And I hope that this model is going to help bring more joy to his leadership. It's certainly bringing a lot to mine. And I think maybe a path towards a healthy way to lead where we can also prioritize family, our community, being invested in older and younger people in our lives outside of work as well. I'm really excited about teaming up as a model for just, I don't know, different, better, healthier way to live and lead.
Where all yeah, where the all the responsibility and all the authority doesn't fall on one person with the dangers to them and the organization that that holds.
That's right. Yeah.
So finally, and now we've got like maybe 1 minute left, but what can people do if they're excited by our conversation?
Well, would love to have them check out our website, cogenerate.org, www.cogenerate.org. You can find all kinds of stuff about us, but really our work is not about us. Our work is pointing towards everybody else out there that is making this work possible. We want to show that cogeneration is a thing, that it's possible, and we want more people to be experimenting and trying it out, just like our co-leadership is. I almost think of it as another innovative program of cogenerate. We want people to jump in with us, try stuff out, and as they learn, whether it's because it's hard or because it makes things easier, share that with us. We'd love to learn together and make more of this happen out in the world.
Cogenerate.org. We'll spell it one more time. It's just putting the word, the C-O before the word generate. Cogenerate.org. For this conversation and many other interviews and articles, to join me in pursuit of a world that just might work, go to terrencemcnally.net, TerrenceMcnally.net, or aworldthatjustmightwork.com. They're the same website. If you want to receive my weekly email announcement telling you who's going to be on, what we're going to talk about, and links to probably 10 articles to flesh out the conversation, email me at TEMcnally, Mcnally, TEMcnally@mac.com, or you can sign up at my website. You can also sign up for the podcast at most of the podcast sites. Wherever you get your podcast, we're probably there. Listen anytime, anywhere. And the archives, which go back many years from when it was a radio show before podcasts even existed, include Michael Lewis, Naomi Klein, Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Connie Rice, Greg Boyle, George Packer, you know, everyone that you might think of when you think of a world that just might work. You can also follow me on Twitter at McNallyTerrence. Thanks to Kiana Williams in production and to George Vassilopoulos at Progressive Voices. And most of all, to you, my listeners, please share this podcast widely. Thank you. Eunice Lynn Nichols.
Thank you.
Keep up your good work.